Before Seattle Times reporter Claudia Rowe moved out here, she was living in Poughkeepsie in New York, where in 1996, women began to disappear. These women had worked as prostitutes, and they had all reported a man named Kendall Francois to the police for sexual assault, for beating them, for choking them. In 1998, Francois was finally arrested, and inside the home he shared with his family were found the bodies of eight women. After Francois was taken into custody, Claudia Rowe drove to that house, and she sat out front, and she kept thinking something she couldn't shake.
It was this sweltering hot day at the very beginning of September 1998, very humid, thick air, and yet I was shivering. And I looked up at that house, and I didn't quite know, of course, what was all going to happen, but I thought, this story is going to change your life. This story means something about you. I felt it right then, and I didn't know how to explain it.
You had no inkling of how the story was going to change your life or how it was you at that moment, just that it was.
There was something about a family. Obviously, this was a family home, and it was clear that something had really gone off the rails in this family, obviously, since there were eight bodies in their home. And I could see that. Obviously, what had gone on inside of that home was very different from the way it presented on the outside. And I suspect that that is what resonated with me, because that was true of my own home growing up as well. Certainly not to the scale in any way of Kendall Francois' life and family, but I had my own ghosts and demons about denial and about the way we present on the outside not being at all reflective of what's going on behind closed doors.
You had your own ghosts and demons, which at that point you hadn't really thought about that much or reflected on that much, but what were those ghosts and demons?
The ghosts and demons had to do with a domestic situation that was extremely volatile and, most of all, extremely unpredictable. And I think that unpredictability was what I really carried with me, and what that sense of nothing is secure and nothing is reliable, you can't depend on anything. I think that is what initially propelled me toward looking at crime, the sense of trying to be ready for anything, understanding that the world could change on a dime and you don't really know who's standing right next to you or sitting behind you, and trying to be, as the psychological community would say, sort of hypervigilant. I wasn't really trying to be, I just was hypervigilant because of growing up in a situation where anything might happen at any moment. It was very unpredictable.
So, as you said, you had these ghosts and demons from your own childhood haunting you. You had this really strong sense that this story of this man who had killed eight women, hid them in his house where his family lived, that story was going to change your life. It connected to you in some way. What did you do with all of that? What was your next course of action?
A frantic and almost addictive compulsion to keep looking deeper. So I began to read sort of very academic texts about psychopathology and serial murder. I read everything from these very dry case studies to the trashiest books and everything in between. I knew I was looking for something. I wasn't quite sure what I was looking for.
So at what point did you decide you needed to go directly to Kendall Francois to try and answer some of these questions?
I decided that I thought maybe he could somehow explain to me or show me the mechanism behind cruelty. I didn't really think he would say, this happened to me and then I did this, you know, like an algebraic equation. I didn't really imagine it would be that clean. But I thought that maybe he would be able to put the pieces together for me. And in somehow understanding the roots of his rage, I might be able to kind of divine like a parallel of the rage that had propelled people in my own life and in my own past. And that's really what I wanted. It was this intense hunger to understand that as a way to leech some of the pain out of it.
I'm talking with Claudia Rowe. She's a reporter for the Seattle Times, and she's also written a new book. It's called The Spider and the Fly, and it's about her time in Poughkeepsie, New York, where she worked as a stringer for the New York Times, the time she spent writing a man named Kendall Francois while he was in prison for murdering 8 women. It's also about her. And at what point did you decide that you were done corresponding with Kendall Francois?
Well, I don't want to give away too much from the end of the book, but there came a point where I've gotten what I need to get from this relationship and what I can get from it. Now it's time to take care of myself and take care of my own life, which had largely disintegrated by that point. Everything outside of the correspondence with Kendall Francois was rotting away. And I felt that I had reached a point of knowledge and needed to start to protect myself more.
And part of that protection was crossing the country. You came here to the Northwest.
I did. Seattle saved my life in many ways. I didn't know that it would. In fact, when I came here, I thought I would just sublet a place for a few months, finish up this troublesome book, and go on with my life, though I didn't really know what that would be. What happened was that I sent some clips, New York Times stuff, to the Seattle PI, the former Post Intelligencer, which no longer exists, thinking that I would just do a little freelance work to support myself while I was muddling through this monstrosity of a book. And the PI said, well, why don't you just come here and cover social issues for us full time as a reporter? And I was only too grateful to have an excuse. And that's what happened. I stepped away from the book for 8 years while I worked at the PI and became a much more seasoned journalist and learned how to have more confidence and trust in my perceptions. That was something that had been very shaky for me my whole life, and something that the interaction with Kendall Francois constantly undermined. I had all these thoughts and perceptions, but I questioned myself endlessly. And in finding a place at the PI, a place where people trusted my vision and believed in me, it really changed me, and it made me a better reporter, probably a better person, too.
There was another piece to wanting a distraction from the troublesome book, as you called it, trying to write about Kendall Francois. And that was that every time you sat down to write about Kendall Francois, you ended up writing about yourself.
Right. My idea for this book was very traditional at first. I was a journalist and I was going to approach this story as a journalist. I was going to write a straight story about how could this city have birthed this person, and how could this person be created? You know, very straight kind of A plus B equals C kind of journalistic answers. That's what I wanted at first, and that's what I thought I was going to write. But every time I sat down to write, stuff from my own past kept coming out. And I'm like, no, I don't want to write a memoir. No, I'm not doing that. But it kept coming out. And then when I would talk with people about this book and they would ask about it, all they ever really wanted to know was, well, why are you doing it? Who are you that you would be doing this? What is drawing you? That's what people were interested in. Despite my fascination with him, the outside world was interested in why was I doing this? And I had to hear that and understand it and then kind of honor what was happening with me in the writing process, which was clearly, I had to admit, this story was absolutely personal. And while it may have begun nominally out of sort of journalistic impulses, I had to be real about how personal it was to me and be honest about that with a reader.
So we started this conversation with this thought that you had the night Kendall Francois was arrested. This story is you. Meaning about you, Claudia. Were you right? Was this story you?
Yeah. This story turned out to be my Waterloo. This story turned out to be a crucible I had to go through to change my understanding of family and to learn a kind of compassion for ugliness. And I think what I came out of it with was a sense that all of us really need to look deeper and with more compassion at those things that repel us. I think that people probably looked at me at various points in my own life as very perplexing and troubling and then looked away. I was a pretty troubling teenager, for sure. I had a similar reaction to the women on the street in Poughkeepsie who were Kendall's victims. I saw street walkers all the time and was repelled initially by what I saw. And how could you do that? And how could you let yourself be there? And same for him, obviously, this monstrous person who did this horrible, horrible, unforgivable things. The natural impulse is to look away or to find a place for blame. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. And I think through doing this book, I learned that blame kind of cuts off the conversation. It's not that there aren't people or forces to blame. Surely there are. But it's a very limiting kind of exercise to find your place for blame. It might be momentarily satisfying, but it doesn't get any of us any farther.
You talked about the process of getting to know Kendall Francois and then the process of writing this book, which was much longer than your actual relationship with Kendall Francois, as a crucible. The whole thing was a crucible. So now that you've been through that crucible, who are you? How did it change you?
I think it made me a much more sensitive reporter, a reporter much more attuned to gray areas. I think we are all living in gray areas, and it made me understand that within so-called evil, there are threads of recognizable humanity. And within so-called good people, there is a capability for great cruelty and harm. And we are all of us on a spectrum, a continuum of sort of humanity. And it left me able to hear stories that are not clean and that have many, many gray areas. And I think that is a much truer way to get at the truth, to be real about the gray areas within all of us.
That's Claudia Rowe, an education reporter for the Seattle Times Now. And she told KUOW's Jeannie Yandel there about her new book, which is called The Spider and the Fly.